Welcome to the America's Workforce Radio Podcast, the flagship production of the American Workers Radio and Podcast Network, where organized labor and its never-ending fight to protect the rights of the American worker come first. Now, presented by LIUNA, Laborers International Union of North America, here's your host, Ed Flash Ferens.
Our Labor Department continually cracking down on unsafe working conditions, hotel workers stepping up their campaign at Hilton, and today on the show, the American Federation of Government Employees and the Broward County Teachers Union. Welcome to the Wednesday, September 15th edition of America's Workforce, where we are available on five platforms. That includes Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, as well as Pandora. Daryl Bell is going to be our first guest on the show, no stranger to America's Workforce. And this is our segment we do each and every month with the American Federation of Government Employees. He is president of Local 31, which represents workers at the Cleveland VA. He's also a legislative political coordinator and president of the AFL-CIO North Shore chapter. Man's got many hats to wear. And today we're going to talk about what's going on with three items: pandemic pay, Heroes Act for essential employees, contract talks for federal employees. You may recall during the Trump administration, it seems everything went in reverse, and there were a number of pay proposals for government workers, and they just were not executed. All that's changing now under the Biden administration. We're also going to touch on staffing and safety issues. So important that we work in a safe workplace. And the vaccine. The union AFGE expects to bargain with agencies following President Biden's announcement last Thursday of new federal COVID-19 workforce protocols. As the highly contagious Delta variant is ravaging the country, the union is also urging members to get vaccinated to protect themselves and others and help end the pandemic so we can all get back to normal lives. That would be nice. Everett Kelly is the president of the American Federation of Government Employees, and he was real simple in his statement. The data, pretty clear. Getting vaccinated isn't just the best way for us to end this pandemic. It's the best way for us to protect each other in the workplace. Now, since the president made his first major announcement about changing COVID-19 protocols for the federal workforce in response to the Delta variant, the union has said that changes like this should be negotiated with their bargaining units where appropriate. In the case of a vaccine mandate, the scope of bargaining is likely to be limited. Nevertheless, workers deserve to have a voice in all those areas that are negotiable, including procedures and appropriate arrangements, none of which should violate the provisions of any existing contract for any local. This is an issue of concern, not just to AFGE, but many unions. We kind of touched on it yesterday with Tom Jermuska talking about the building trades. And there's a lot of companies are saying you got to get vaccinated. And if you don't get vaccinated, we're going to have to let you go. And if we let you go, we won't have enough workers. So that means your union could suffer because we may have to go to a non-union firm to get workers. You don't want to do that. Tough issues to talk about, and we'll run them down with Daryl Bell. Anna Fusco will be our second guest on the show, and she's president of the Broward County Teachers Union in Florida. Broward County is just above Miami-Dade in Florida, and I feel so bad for the teachers. They have their hands full. Yesterday, the governor of Florida, Ron DeSantis, threatened to fine local government employers $5,000 per vaccination they enforce. And this is all comes after Biden's mandate last week. So if the governor carries through with the threat, it would be the State Department of Health's responsibility to enforce the rule starting actually tomorrow. Yeah, September 16th. We'll touch on that. See how teachers are doing. They represent about 11,500 teachers, paraprofessionals, technical service professionals, and also a charter school, several charter schools in Broward County. And a number of teachers, and we're seeing it all around the country, they are taking, in some cases, early retirement because they don't want to deal with the crap that's going on in their respective states. So I don't know how it is in Broward County. That's why we're bringing Anna to the show. She'll be our second guest. I want to talk about worker safety. And I tell you, we are so darn lucky to have Marty Walsh in as labor secretary. Let me read this story to you. On January 28th of this year, an uncontrolled release of liquid nitrogen at a poultry processing facility in Gainesville, Georgia, claimed the lives of six workers. Less than 2 months later, workers were again subjected to a chemical release at the plant after an ammonia leak. That happened on March 11th. Well, the U.S. Department of Labor's Occupational Safety and Health Administration investigation identified 23 safety and health violations at the facility. So, OSHA cited the Foundation Food Group Incorporated for exposing workers to various respiratory hazards associated with the potential unexpected release of ammonia and for failing to install a system that protected employees. In addition, OSHA found Foundation Food Group failed to, and there's a list here, number one, guard horizontal shafts on conveyors which expose workers to caught in hazards. Number two, providing adequate training and ensure workers use locks to isolate hazardous energy while servicing conveyors. Number three, label electrical breakers, cover unused openings in electrical boxes, and use electrical devices as designed, which expose workers to electrical shock hazards. That's ridiculous. Number four, provide fall protection while working from equipment at heights over 4 feet. Number five, require employees use eye protection while working with compressed air. Oh my gosh, can you imagine that? Blow your eyeballs out. Next is provide adequate hearing protection, testing and training for employees exposed to high levels of noise. And lastly, maintain drainage in areas of wet processes, exposing employees to slip hazards. Well, altogether, the agency proposed $154,674 in penalties. Comment here from Jim Frederick. Jim comes from the Steelworkers Union. He's the Acting Assistant Secretary for Occupational Safety and Health. He said, there is no situation where employees should be expected to risk serious injury or death, especially on the heels of a tragic incident that took the lives of six co-workers. Foundation Food has again flouted their responsibility to assess workplace hazards and ensure measures are taken to protect employees. This is unacceptable, and OSHA will continue its mission to hold employers accountable. Foundation Food provides fully cooked and pre-cooked poultry products to food service and retail clients, as well as national restaurant chains. Now, the company has 15 business days from receipt of the citations, which happened Monday, and to deal with the penalties. And they can request an informal conference with OSHA's area director. Now, under OSHA, which was passed in 1970, employers are responsible for providing safe and healthful workplaces for their employees. Their role is to ensure these conditions for workers by setting and enforcing standards and providing training, education, as well as assistance. And obviously, none of that is the case in Foundation Food Group. I can't believe that after six people die, they have another accident, not even 2 months later. By the way, Mr. Walsh, our labor secretary, is in Louisville, Kentucky today for discussions with state, local, and community leaders, workers, employers, and care providers about the Biden-Harris administration's historic investments in the bipartisan infrastructure bill and the Build Back Better agenda. Today, he was at the Doss High School in Louisville, seeing firsthand, this is a great story, how a $250,000 investment from GE Appliances is allowing high school students to earn a certified production technician credential to train on the same equipment used at GE. The initiative is an example of how Kentuckiana Works, the local workforce development board for Greater Louisville, funded by the Federal Workforce Innovation and Opportunity Act, is leading in the effort to build strong community partnerships for a stronger, more resilient workforce in the region. Secretary Walsh then commemorated National Recovery Month by visiting the Healing Place, a nationally recognized recovery center that supports nearly 1,000 people in their journey towards sobriety. Following a private tour with the facility's leadership, workers, and program participants, as well as the secretary, met the media to talk about the day that they had in Louisville, Kentucky. That's an active labor secretary. Build back better. Create good paying union jobs. Speaking of which, I got to give you an update here on Hilton. Talked about this a couple of weeks ago with Fred Redman, the new secretary treasurer of the AFL-CIO. Hilton is a union hotel. Let's be straight on that. And they've been a union hotel for a long time. Here's the problem. They're cutting back on cleaning their rooms every day. When you go to Hilton, I mean, Hilton's not cheap. I mean, face it, you'll pay $300, $400, sometimes $500 for a room. You would expect the room to be clean, right? Well, the company, they're claiming they don't have enough workers. Meanwhile, the domestic workers, the cleaning ladies, are speaking out, and the AFL-CIO is stepping up their petition drive. Just Google Unite Here. That's the union they belong to. In fact, I'm going to read to you a letter from Lisa Cruz. She's a Hilton housekeeper, member of the union. She says, guests still pay high prices for a room, but Hilton thinks it can take advantage of a crisis to make standard services on demand. This makes my job more painful because the rooms get so much dirtier when they go days without cleaning, and I have to use stronger chemicals to get them clean. As a result, my shoulder hurts after cleaning all these rooms at checkout, lifting mattresses, scrubbing bathroom glass in so many checkout rooms causes me significant pain. During COVID-19, I went to physical therapy and purchased countless bottles of pain pills and tubes of pain relief creams. Now, hotel guests and housekeepers are joining forces and taking action, telling Hilton that hotel rooms should be cleaned every day. Hotels, pay attention to what guests want, and you can make a difference. That's the only way we're going to change this. I mean, come on. If you're going to pay that amount of money, you got to demand that your room is cleaned every day. And from what I've been gathering here, we're talking tens of thousands of housekeepers that are in the process of losing their jobs. They're not making a whole lot of money, but they're in the process of losing their jobs because Hilton is so damn cheap. Again, go to Unite Here, and the AFL-CIO is also doing a petition drive on this, AFLCIO.org. All right, quick break. When we come back, our segment with the American Federation of Government Employees.
This is America's Workforce.
It takes LIUNA to build North America's infrastructure. From roads and bridges to schools and skyscrapers, the men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, build the projects we depend on. From constructing the Freedom Tower on the site of the former World Trade Center to untangling Washington, D.C.'s congested interstate, LIUNA members do the work that matters. Find out what it takes to be built by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
America's Workforce is being brought to you in part by the Communication Workers of America.
America's Workforce Radio is sponsored in part by the International Union of Painters and Allied Trades, District Council 6, representing painters, glazers, drywall finishers, and sign and display industry workers. They remind you that belonging to a union is your right as an American.
Union members need to be heard. Reliable and convenient union voting has never been more important than it is now. Make voting easy for your membership by working with survey and ballot systems. SBS offers encrypted and monitored solutions that ensure your elections are accurate and accessible for every member through mail-in, online, and in-person voting. Visit surveyandballotsystems.com and take the next step in getting secure and auditable elections.
America's Workforce is sponsored in part by Boyd Watterson Asset Management, LLC. Find out more about our investment solutions tailored to meet the needs of Taft-Hartley funds at BoydWatterson.com.
Now, back to Ed Flash Ferentz with America's Workforce.
And don't forget, you can check us out on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. Twitter handle is at AWF Union Podcast, AWF Union Podcast. I'll tell you. Speaking of unions, salute to the unions out in California. They did a great job. California's Governor Gavin Newsom easily survived a recall election yesterday in a very closely watched race that drew national attention as well as campaign visits from President Biden, Vice President Harris. And apparently with 62% of the ballots counted and more than two-thirds of them saying no to the recall, Newsom addressed his supporters in Sacramento, and this is what he said. No is not the only thing that was expressed tonight. I want to focus on what we said yes to as a state. We said yes to science and yes to vaccines. We said yes to ending this pandemic. Words of Gavin Newsom, still governor of the state of California. All right, let's go to line number one and welcome a dear friend and also the American Federation of Government Employees, one of the many proud sponsors of this show we call America's Workforce. And joining us is Daryl Bell, Air Force vet, working at Local 31 at the Cleveland VA. Daryl Bell, welcome back to America's Workforce. How are we doing today, brother?
Not too bad. Thanks for having me on again.
And how's Local 31? Why don't you give us a quick rundown of Local 31 for our national audience here. How many members? How are we faring there?
We're still just up under 2,000 dues-paying members, and we represent over 5,000 bargaining unit employees, over 13 CBOCs, which are community-based outpatient clinics, and a few other outlying areas are surgical, outpatient, and our community resource center and outpatient dialysis.
Mm-hmm. Good, good, good. How is, I have to ask you this, and I've had various locals on around the country, VA locals, like Local 31, and, you know, under the Trump administration, morale was not very good. I think you can speak to that, but things have changed. Well, give me an assessment on under Biden's leadership and the new VA secretary, how things are faring right now.
Well, we definitely are no longer under that overt attack, but we still cannot, you know, afford to fall asleep at the wheel. So a lot of that pressure to remove the collective bargaining rights of our members and our bargaining unit, that has subsided. So we're kind of able to focus on, you know, work-life improvement, increasing our collective bargaining rights and solidifying them a lot more.
Good, good, good. Well, one of the things that you want to talk about is a pandemic pay. I mean, we're still in the midst of this pandemic. This Delta variant is scary. A lot of young people are getting it. A lot of hospitals are stretched. And I understand the HEROES Act, which passed some months ago for essential employees. There might be some pay in there. Can you speak to that, Daryl?
Well, absolutely. And this has kind of been really something that's kind of stuck in my craw, because we were referred to as America's heroes. We were referred to as essential employees. But when it came time to compensate those individuals for enduring such a hazardous work environment, all of a sudden there's, you know, pushback on giving that hazard pay, to the point where AFGE nationally had to file a lawsuit seeking 25% hazardous duty pay for general schedule employees and 8% for wage grade, which is less than what the HEROES Act would have paid out, but it's at least something. You know, the accolades and the attaboys, that's fine, but the reality is these individuals are taking on an excessive risk. There's a risk for their families, a risk for their friends, anybody that they come in contact with. And we really didn't have an option because we have to do it. And it's not that we don't want to do it, but I think that there should be a way to alleviate some of the financial concerns of having to work in such an environment. And they continue to say that we're in this pandemic. Well, that means we should be compensated for that.
And right now, none of that has come through. We're still in the talking stage. Is that what you're saying?
Right, because the HEROES Act was brought up in the last Congress.
Right.
Mitch McConnell never brought it for a vote, which I'm very upset about that, because that's not your job. Your job is to bring it for a vote, not to determine what does and does not come up for a vote. So
you.
When the new Congress was implemented, then that would mean you would have to reintroduce it to the House, then to the Senate, to get it to the current president's desk. And that has not happened. Now, there have been some COVID payouts, you know, for, you know, this is the agency's way of trying to get some funds to people, because you're right, the morale was completely tanked. And they understand that these people are demoralized to a point where we have to give something, but then not everybody got it. This is something that everyone that was required to come through that door every day, they should receive something. And so that's kind of where we're at with that.
Daryl, I have to ask you, how did they pick and choose? You said some people got it, some people didn't get it. What was the formula for that?
Well, there were people that had direct contact with COVID patients or direct contact with COVID exposure where it was a known.
All right.
Okay, and that's fine. But I think that overall, anyone that had to walk through the doors of that VA hospital or any VA hospital across the country, because we were still all classified as essential employees, and people forget we were the ones when they first shut the city down that we actually had to ride around with paperwork in our cars saying that we were allowed to be on the road.
Mm-hmm. I remember that.
You know,
yeah.
So if it was that important that we absolutely had, and it is important, so I'm not dismissing that. But at the same time, what are you doing for the individuals that had to endure such a situation?
Yeah. Another question here. Did that cause any animosity? You mentioned, obviously, the ones that were in direct contact with COVID patients. But there's some that are getting the hero's pay, some not. And what was there any friction as a result of that?
Oh, absolutely. And because it's not actually hero's pay. And see, so it's not completely problematic for the agency, because there was some attempts. I mean, we had a retention incentive bonus. We had this COVID payout, which came out of a separate budget, but it wasn't Heroes Act. It wasn't pandemic pay. Uh-huh. So, you know, these were smaller amounts. And then you're right, everyone didn't get it. So, of course, there's animosity because people feel like, well, I came to work. I did. I was present. You know, I had to endure some of the same things that these people did, maybe not to the extent. And so while it was a good thing, it also caused more chaos and confusion.
As we speak, then, I take it they're you're in the middle of all this. They're trying to iron this out right now.
Yes. And hopefully we'll have some kind of resolution on this. Unfortunately, there has been some governmental pushback for the hazardous duty pay lawsuit that was filed. So that's still ongoing.
Okay. What about the contract talks for federal employees? Because I know you guys have been on the back burner for years now. What's the status on that?
Actually, this has been the most productive I've seen as far as these collective bargaining talks in the last 4 years, because there wasn't any communication. There wasn't any actual attempt to bargain over rights. So now this has actually moved forward at a much faster pace, and it's having some positive outcomes. I think that they'll be able to reach the resolutions they need to reach and, you know, get some things put in place. But it's been a more positive experience up to now.
Mm-hmm.
Than it was previously, because before there was basically an outright failure to bargain. They were trying to impose and strip our contract down to nothing, as if these people that come to work every day don't deserve to have fair representation and their collective bargaining rights intact in the middle of a pandemic.
Right. You're referring when Trump was in office, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah, I think there was a time when there was a proposal of like 1% or 2%, and then they whittled it down to nothing, and then the 1%, and that didn't mean anything because your health care costs went up. Where are we now, percentage-wise? Can you reveal any figures to us?
Looks like they've settled in at the 2.7%. I think we were originally pushing for 3.2%, and that was the other thing, too. Even that 1%, the previous administration proposed it and then tried to withdraw it, But the bottom line is this: we are supposed to, with the increases and anything that the military gets, there's supposed to be pay parity with the military.
Yeah.
So if the military gets an X amount of increase, federal employees are supposed to get the same thing. And then we're so far behind on the increases because we've, over the last 10, 15 years, we've had multiple times where there was no increase at all. And then at the same time, cost of living, inflation, everything went up.
Mm-hmm.
So we are like really, really far behind on where we should be pay-wise.
I didn't realize it goes that far back. I mean, you're supposed to have pay parity. Is that something by law? Is that something that...
Yes, that's the Pay Parity Act.
Okay. And for 10 or 15 years, you did not have that?
Well, what was happening, we'd get some increases depending on the administration. So I'm familiar with it from 2010 forward. And then we had a period of time, 2011, 2012, 2013, where we had minimal or no increases at all. And then it's just been the absolute minimum at best that they could give, you know, where we would be looking at, say, a proposed 2%. And then by the time everything settled out, you ended up at 1.7 or 1.3. Or 1%.
So it's almost like who's in office at the time. We said, well, maybe we'll give them, you know, parity. Maybe we won't. But that's just not right. Not right at all. Daryl Bell is joining us on our live line. He is president of Local 31 of the American Federation of Government Employees. He's also legislative political coordinator and president of the North Shore AFL-CIO. We'll talk some more. We'll get into staffing and safety issues. And later in the show, we're going to check in with the teachers union in Broward County, Florida, where the governor said yesterday they're going to fine people if they push mask wearing. I tell you, I don't know what's going on in this country. Back in a few minutes.
This is America's Workforce. More shows available at awfradio.com.
It takes LIUNA to power North America with affordable energy. The men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, have the skills needed to build and maintain oil, natural gas, nuclear, solar, and wind projects that are shaping America's energy future. From new energy tech to retrofitted facilities, LIUNA members do it all. Find out what it takes to be powered by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
The United Steelworkers of America represent over 70,000 workers in the state of Ohio. Steelworker members enjoy the benefits of some of the best contracts of any workers in the world. Many of your friends, neighbors, and relatives are members of one of the most effective democratic unions in our country. With the pressures unorganized workers are under in today's economy, you need to join them. So call the Steelworkers Organizing Office at 216-292-5683 or toll free at 1-800-443-3752.
Have you or a loved one been diagnosed with cancer after taking Zantac? If you have taken Zantac and have cancer, you may be entitled to compensation. The trial lawyers at Kelly & Ferraro may be able to help you. Find us at kellyandferraro.com. Kelly & Ferraro, trial lawyers.
You're listening to America's Workforce, and this next segment brought to you by the North Coast Labor Federation.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And, of course, we are available on five platforms. That includes Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, as well as Pandora. And when you get a chance, let's take a minute, sign up, receive our shows on a regular basis, and give us a rating. Always appreciate a five-star rating. Let's go back to our live line and rejoin Daryl Bell. Daryl is an Air Force vet. He's also president of Local 31 of the American Federation of Government Employees, representing workers at the Cleveland VA. Daryl, let's talk about staffing and safety issues. And I've been following this for years now because I believe I saw a figure, and this was some years back, and it's been pretty constant, that there's about 50,000 positions across the country that need to be filled at VA hospitals. And I guess the process for hiring takes a while. I'd like you to speak to that as far as Local 31. How are we doing with staffing? And obviously, safety is so important right now in the middle of a pandemic. But let's start with the staffing. Where do we rank at Local 31?
Well, actually, and you were correct, that number would range between 45,000 to 50,000 necessary vacancies that needed to be filled. What we've seen recently in lieu of the pandemic, we've seen an uptick in hiring, but there's still a drawn out process. But during the pandemic, we would see new employee orientation classes of maybe 15, you know, 10 to 15 people, which is definitely not enough. And then as we move forward into this next administration and they got a better hold on how to deal with this pandemic, lately I've been seeing classes of 40 or better. So there has been an uptick in hiring, and they're trying to keep pace with the need of the facility, but we still need more qualified people, which that also ties into, you know, the pay aspect, the onboarding aspect of it, the length of time that that takes, because if people want to work, they want to be able to get onboarded a lot faster. And the process is still too drawn out right now.
When you say too drawn out, I'm going to use myself as an example. Ed Flash Ferentz, man, maybe I got some experience in healthcare. I got a degree. I've worked in various fields, and I want to work at the Cleveland VA. And I go over there and I apply. What kind of process are we talking about from start to finish? And say I'm a good candidate. I'm a good candidate. I want to work there. How long is it going to take me to get hired?
It varies on the department. And then everything is done online. It's done through usajobs.gov. So you would have to upload your resume, apply, create a profile, apply for the job. Then you have to, on some of the jobs, you have to answer what's called your knowledge, skills, abilities, and other, which are your, we call them CASOs. And then that's how they kind of figure out who gets referred over for an interview. Once you get referred over for an interview, depending on how many people need to be interviewed, then that has to be scheduled. And then they also have to take into understanding that, you know, how will the interview process take place? Will it be virtual? Will it be in person? Then after all of that, they still have to do the background checks, the federal background checks. And then once you get through all of that process, and then they give you, say, a start date, but that process could take some time. And so it's not as quick as just going down to a place, filling out an application, and then next week you get an interview. It doesn't happen that fast. And a lot of times we lose out on potential candidates because the process takes too long, or the pay isn't where it needs to be as far as being competitive in certain areas. Some areas we do pretty well, but other areas, you know, we're not as competitive. And if it's taking a long time to onboard that individual, they'll seek to be employed somewhere else.
Yeah. Yeah. I follow you. Well, hopefully they'll move to expedite that to some degree. But I understand you want to make sure you get the right people there. We're treating our heroes there at the VA. I have to ask you, because of the staffing shortages, and you've heard so much of like nurse to patient ratios. I know some states try to regulate that. They did a really good job on that in California. How do we rank at the Cleveland VA on that, Darryl?
That's definitely one of the concerns that we're still working on. And you're right, that I think California is one of the few states that had a nurse to patient ratio that was actually defined by law. I think that was the Boxer's law, I do believe. And I think it was a 1-7 ratio or something along those lines. There's been a lot of pushback in the industry across the board, because a lot of times these facilities, not our facility, because we're not profit based, but they're looking more so at their bottom line instead of at delivery of care. I think that we do a pretty good job at the VA with regard to that, but we still need more bodies. We need a different methodology as far as the staffing, because we have to take into account your regular time off, your FMLA, now COVID leave, you know, so you have all of these other aspects that dramatically impact your ability to adequately staff your different units. And then you need to onboard some more people. So there's no easy fix to this right now. I mean, of course, we want more people in through the door. We want more people at the bedside. But at the same time, we have to account for the people that we already have on the books and how they're looking at well, there are this many people that are actually here, but how many people are actually present? Because that's who's going to be delivering the care. And then I believe that that's a safety issue as well, because if you have a ridiculous amount of patients per nurse or per nursing assistant, that's, you know, the delivery of care could substantially be reduced.
Yeah, and we don't want that to happen. No. I want to pick up on safety a little bit, and I'd like to see how we're faring at the Cleveland VA, because I know there's been some VA hospitals around the country where, and this is primarily when Trump was in office, and the respective people in those VA hospitals were speaking out. Some of them were shut down, chastised, fired, reassigned. Where do we stand on safety protocol? And it's so important, especially with this Delta variant. It's scaring a whole lot of people. But where do we rank on that, Daryl?
We're actually, that's an ongoing process. So we still have to have concerns with the availability of safety equipment, be it your regular mask, your N95s, your PAPRs, which are your, those create like a laminar airflow so that nothing can get in. If you're going in to do a COVID patient, you have to have it where that positive airflow doesn't allow for anything for you to be able to inhale it. So, you know, the social distancing, the increases in telework where possible. So those are things that have been expanded, and we're trying to address these issues in real time. So it's been a lot better. We've actually worked pretty well together as far as agency and the labor with that. I mean, there's always room for improvement, but that's still a major concern, because we're going into what will probably be the next season of this. I mean, we never really came out of it, but I do foresee an uptick in cases, in exposures, and this and that. So we try and stay ahead of this so that we protect our staff as much as possible, and then that way they can continue to provide the care. But there are some dire concerns, and people are really afraid. I mean, let's just be realistic. People are afraid of what we're facing every day that we come into work. So mm-hmm. we have to work as hard as we can to alleviate some of those fears, provide adequate protection. So, like I said, this is an ongoing process. There's no easy fix to this.
No. This is a silent killer, and it's far, far from being under control right now. Daryl, I want to thank you for joining us today on America's Workforce. I really salute you. I salute everybody at Local 31. I know they're big fans of this show. And the website AFGELocal31.org. AFGELocal31.org. And the national website, just AFGE.org. You take care, my brother. Stay safe. Please keep in touch. And, you know, anytime something new comes up, you got a voice here on America's Workforce, okay?
Thank you. I appreciate that.
All right. Daryl Bell on our live line. Quick break. When we come back, we're going to check in with the teachers in Broward County. What the heck is going on in Florida? That's coming up next.
You're listening to America's Workforce with Ed Flash Ferens.
It takes LIUNA to keep America running. Over 70,000 public employees are part of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, delivering critical services such as healthcare and emergency response, as well as maintaining roads and sanitation systems. Even the National Postal Mail Handlers Union, representing over 47,000 U.S. postal workers, is affiliated with LIUNA. Find out what it takes for LIUNA to keep America running at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
There is unity and strength for workers.
We are the USW.
We are the USW.
The United Steelworkers.
The largest industrial union in North America.
We represent 850,000 members in the U.S., Canada, and the Caribbean.
We work in metals,
rubber,
chemicals,
paper,
oil refining, atomic energy, and the service sector.
We are steelworkers. Standing strong and fighting for what's right.
The Heat and Frost Insulators and Allied Workers are proud to be a title sponsor for America's Workforce Radio. The Insulators Union is leading the way in the mechanical insulation industry, fire stopping, and infectious disease control. Regarded as North America's energy conservation specialist, these professionals are known for their professional work and dedication. You can learn more about the Insulators Union at insulators.org.
Mesothelioma is a rare type of cancer caused by exposure to asbestos. If you were exposed to asbestos and have mesothelioma or lung cancer, the trial lawyers at Kelly & Ferraro may be able to help you. Find us at kellyandferraro.com. Kelly & Ferraro, trial lawyers.
Now, back to Ed Flash Ferens with America's Workforce.
And don't forget, you can check us out on Facebook, follow us on Twitter. Twitter handle is at AWF Union Podcast. By the way, this next segment brought to you on behalf of the Ohio Federation of Teachers, in part, I should say, oh.aft.org. Melissa Cropper will be joining us, president of the OFT. That'll be next Tuesday. Right now, we're going to talk to another teacher. Well, she's retired. Anna Fusco is her name, and she is president of the Broward County Teachers Union. It's btuonline.com. And Anna, welcome to the show. Thanks for joining us today.
Hey, thank you, Flash. This is exciting.
11,500 teachers. I saw that on your website. Is that still pretty accurate?
Well, those are our members. We have a little under 14,000 actual teachers in the district. We also represent our teacher assistants and a whole plethora of support staff and a technical support professionals, which is about another 500. So we represent about 18,000 possible members, and we have 11,500 members.
Gotcha.
That are actually paid dues members.
I did not realize that Broward is the fifth largest school district in the country. I'll tell you, that's a lot of people. And you've been in the teaching profession for what, almost 30 years?
Yes, almost 30 years.
30 years, okay. Well, I'd like to know what's going on down there, because, in fact, I just saw yesterday that your governor, Ron DeSantis, said that in an effort to stand up for freedom, the state of Florida will be fining any local government that requires their employees to be vaccinated against COVID-19. And this is all in response to what Biden did. And he's not crazy about mask wearing as well. So I have to ask you, what's the response from the teachers union down there?
Well, we've been active with our school district and our school board of standing together on keeping everybody safe and healthy. You know, we've lost four educators since the start of school, August 11th. And over the whole state of Florida, we've lost over 75 educators and support staff. You know, the highest amount of students have been infected with COVID. The hospitals are packed with COVID-related cases, and that's pushing people that just need basic health care in the hospitals that have to wait or not even get in there in fear of contracting COVID. So it is just stand up for freedom. So what's next? He's going to take away the mandated vaccines of measles and polio and everything else that all of us have had and been getting for decades. This is a vaccine and a health crisis that vaccines have been proven to help get rid of the infectious, disease. And he wants to get in the way and now harm people in their pockets, businesses. He wants to open up economy, but in the other hand, he wants to go and harm it. I'm not seeing a leader doing the right thing and, wanting the economy to flourish, having people safe and healthy so they can be part of a functioning economy. It's kind of twisted. It's almost like, we're abused women and children. You know, one minute we're giving you something, the next minute we're slapping you down. It's quite disheartening.
Well, I've been following what the national unions have been saying. And I know the AFT, and I believe the NEA as well, they're saying over 90% of teachers are vaccinated. Is that pretty much the case in Broward County right now?
Oh, absolutely. We actually, Broward Teachers Union did a survey on all of our bargaining units, not just the members. I sent it out to both groups, and over 86% came back with, yes, I'm vaccinated. And the Broward Teachers Union has been part of helping with people getting vaccinated. We've been having vaccine drives right at our union hall, and we're also getting ready to be part of helping out with testing for all of Broward County Public School employees. We're opening up a testing site at our union hall for school board employees and their families, because it's been really quite difficult for people to get testing. So if we're working and we're in school or even in our buildings and there's positive cases that have come up, and then people need to quarantine, and then, you know, one of the requirements is to get tested, it's been overwhelming since the rise of COVID cases to even get an appointment in a timely manner. So we want to make it, you know, just as easy and accessible and free for all of our 35,000 employees to be able to have a destination just for them, so they can get a test, get the results, and get back to work as quick as possible if they're testing negative.
That's good to hear. What about the children in the schools? Because we're seeing areas, especially places like Florida, where you have governors like DeSantis, where a lot of kids are getting sick. Is that the case in Broward County?
Yeah, the numbers have grown, and they're not deathly sick, thank goodness. We've only had one severe case in the later part of the summer, and she's recovering just beautifully, but she spent a while in the hospital, one of our high school students right here in Broward County. But, you know, they're back in school. We're face-to-face. Even though, you know, we're trying to keep these protocols in effect the best as we can. Our students have been wonderful complying with the masks and helping keeping themselves sanitized, washing their hands, and intermittently cleaning. They're really doing really well. But when you've got anywhere from 22 to 35 students in a classroom, and you're in a self-contained room for 6.5 hours, 7 hours a day, you know, it's possible that, you know, somebody may be walking in with COVID, or, you know, worst case scenario, spreading COVID. But we're doing really well with contact tracing, trying to keep the spread out of our schools. And it's really worked well last school year, our summer experience and the beginning of our school year. But we do have, you know, positive cases popping up both with our students and our educators and employees in Broward County, but working really hard not to have that spread happen, because everybody's doing their part.
Now, Anna, there is a mask mandate in Broward County right now. Is that right?
There is. We were the first to push forward with it and stick with it, even though our governor came out the next day and tried to put consequences on our school board members and our school district. And our school board stood strong for the safety and healthy of our students and all of the employees of Broward County Public Schools. And, you know, people looked at it as defying him, and our district looks at it as he's creating his own rules as he moves along every day, and, you know, putting it to the challenge to the courts, because it was unconstitutional what he was imposing. And they're going to continue to stick with that mask mandate so we can keep kids in school safe and healthy.
And I'm reading he wanted to withhold, what is it, $500 million in funds for your district there? Is that how much money he wants to take away?
Yeah, well, you know, he started out with a large sum, and then every time that there was a pushback, he would pull back also. So right now he's literally holding back the funding that pays the school board members' salaries.
Okay.
So that's what he's doing right now, and he's actually taken action on it. And here's what's interesting. Other school districts in Florida have taken on the mask mandate, and the first two, which is Broward Schools and Alachua, who are women superintendents and women school board members, are the two school districts that he is putting all of the sanctions on. He hasn't taken action on any other. He's threatened them, but he hasn't taken action on any other school districts with men on the board, men superintendents, and so forth. So kind of sends a message also.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, there's areas in the country where school board members have just quit altogether because their lives are being threatened by parents that don't want to put a mask on their kid, or they don't want to be forced to take a vaccine. I mean, it's ridiculous what's going on. Anna, look, you've been doing this for decades now. Did you ever think that there would be a time in America where we would actually be anti-science? I mean, health professionals, when you go to a hospital and have a surgical procedure, the doctors and nurses all wear masks, and there's probably very good reason for that, right? I mean, but this,
actually, you're absolutely right, Flash. I've been saying that. I walked into my dentist office a month or two ago, and I'm like, yeah, now that I think about it, you've always worn masks. It's, uh-huh. You know, there's something in the science that gives that a little extra layer for some protection when you know you might get within, you know, 6 feet or 3 feet of a particular person. Politics is taking over everything right now, and people with their self agendas to fulfill their own self, you know, prophecies, I guess I want to call it. It's not just happening in Florida. It's happening across our country.
With that being said, Anna, how are the teachers holding up? How's morale? I mean, this is a real battle going on right now.
Well, it's hard. Let me tell you, just like you said, there's school board members that are leaving, you know, the profession. Teachers here in Broward County, we had 210 on a resignation and retirement list yesterday, just from the start of school, August 11th. So what does that tell you? They're not treated so great by community. Unfortunately, some of our parents, you know, our district management is under such pressure. You know, when you're pressured, you inadvertently put pressures on the people below you. You might not always mean it, but it does seem to happen. And the stress and the fatigue that is happening is causing people to want to leave our profession. So keeping the morale high and keeping the spirits up and finding ways to keep people feeling of value has been a real struggle because we're strapped with funding. So it would help, you know, with getting more people in to take over some of the workload, paying people really what they're worth and valued and paying for the extra work that they're doing. And our governor's holding $8 billion in the relief fund that the Biden administration has given. So that's a whole nother piece of where he's withholding funding. So jeez. It's just so, talk about freedom. It's so anti-American to withhold funding and taking care of the public school system. And one person standing up saying, I get to do this. Oh, and I'm going to do it. And you want to take me to court, and I'm going to challenge you in court. And to continue to have that battle and the bantering back and forth, it's just a waste of money, waste of energy, and just shows that there's no value for the public school system.
Yeah, yeah. In the meantime, teachers and kids are getting sick as a result of this. All right, Anna.
Getting sick and passing away. Yes.
We are just about out of time. I appreciate your comments, your passion. Please keep in touch with us. I mean, this is a nationally podcast show. We check in with various parts of the country to see what's going on so everybody knows what's going on in America.
Well, I appreciate the work that you're doing, Flash. Thank you for having Broward and listening to the voices of, you know, the educators that want to take care of the students and children here in our public school system. Thank you so much.
BTUonline.com. And you could follow them on Facebook, Broward Teachers Union, and on Twitter at Broward Teachers. Anna, stay safe and please keep in touch, okay?
You too, Flash. Have a great rest of the day. Thank you.
That's it for another edition of America's Workforce. Tomorrow, the North Coast Labor Federation and the latest from the nation. Until then, all of you have a safe and wonderful day.
That concludes another episode of the America's Workforce Radio Podcast. Thanks for listening, and be sure to subscribe so you never miss a show. America's Workforce is a production of Labor Tools and BMA Media Group. Find out more information online at labortools.com.